aged 67. BBC News.
Read by Vigi Alice. In 2003, Paul O'Grady was Sue Lawley's castaway on Desert Island Discs. You can find that edition of the programme on BBC Sounds. Next this evening, here on Radio 4, the comedian and Strictly Come Dancing star Ellie Taylor will be back with a new series of Safe Space. That's in just a moment.
On BBC iPlayer.
This is beyond anything that I would ever have dreamed of anyone doing.
Five pairs of ordinary Brits on an epic journey.
I just hope we can get there before we run out of money.
With no phones.
This is harder than I thought.
No flights.
Our only option is to hire a car.
Oh.
It's going to be so expensive.
And no luxuries.
Bear spray.
Bear spray?
No.
I don't want to do this.
Race across the world.
I'm excited now.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Welcome, one and all, to Ellie Taylor's Safe Space!
Hello, and welcome to Safe Space with me, Ellie Taylor. Yes, we are back for the third series, and unlike the last one, we are joined by a real-life audience here at the BBC Radio Theatre! So, get ready, the Radio 4 audience. You're about to hear some spicy opinions. Now, don't tense up too much. I'm not going to say anything unforgivable, especially now I've been on Strictly. You've got to play it safe when you've been on Strictly. But that being said, my first opinion in this series is that dancing is stupid and Craig Revel Horwood can get in the bin. Don't worry, we'll come to today's topic soon enough, and then, lovely people of the radio theatre and beyond, you will be voting on whether you agree with me. I know, voting like a democracy. Can you imagine? You remember that? So sit back, or stand up, I'm not your mum, and let's explore what buttons of yours I can delicately push. Joining me this week and every week is my assistant, my partner in crime, my BBC-appointed straight white man. Please say hello to Robin Morgan!
Hello, audience. It's lovely to be back.
Oh, what have you been up to since we were last on? I was on Strictly.
I know. Every Saturday, I spammed all my lads' WhatsApp groups to get everyone to vote for you.
Oh, Robin, you're not in any lads' WhatsApp groups. Robin Morgan, everyone! Right, enough of Robin's sad little life. Let's chat to our studio audience and focus on their sad little lives. Before the show, we asked the people in this room what their most controversial opinion is. Bear in mind that these are the people who are at a free radio recording in London, so all bets are off.
Right, so we asked you what your most controversial opinion or bugbear was. We have Lego! Ban Lego modules. You shouldn't have kits, if, for example, Star Wars. You should just have packs of bricks in multiple sizes. That is from Stephen. You've been handed a microphone. Hello, Stephen.
Tell us about Lego. Who hurt you?
I played Lego when I was a kid. You just had a box full of bricks. You made something with those bricks. Nowadays, you go out, you buy a pack. Oh, this is the latest thing in Star Wars. Let's build that. Rather than allowing kids to use their own imagination to build from a box of bricks.
But what if they really liked Star Wars and wanted to make a Chewbacca?
Then make it from a box of bricks.
The thing, I can see people nodding.
Do you agree? Yes. Who knew Lego was like just so dramatic?
This is how fascism starts.
Yes. And Stephen's the leader, quite clearly. Do you have kids?
No.
Okay. Because of the Lego. He doesn't want to risk it.
But he has the anger of a man for the last 30 years who's stepped on Lego every single morning.
Do you still play Lego now?
No.
I let you think about Lego quite a lot.
I just had a lot of Lego when I was a kid, but I've seen a few 80s programmes and stuff like that, and they use all the proper Lego and stuff. But recently, there's loads of stuff going on eBay that's this Star Wars thing, this Doctor Who thing. It's all...
So he doesn't have kids and he doesn't play Lego, but he searches on eBay for Lego kits. That infuriate him. Stephen, we love you. Thank you so much. I've got one here. Graham says, his bugbear is, I've been applying for BBC shows for the last 22 years. And this is my first. We are so honoured. You always remember your first. So thank you. Graham, we were talking about this backstage. We couldn't work out if you're annoyed that this is the first... Is that the annoyment? That this is the bloody show that you got for the first time in 22 years?
I forgot I'd applied for it.
Well, thanks for coming, Betty.
Thank you. They just make you feel special, don't they? Yeah. What have you applied for that you've remembered that you've applied for?
I've probably applied for Jules Holland about 200 times.
Oh, get out your saxophone, Robin. Go on.
Do you ever think that he doesn't want to see you?
You've really never got to see anything?
No, never.
Is Jules Holland the dream show that you'd like to go and see?
I'd like to go and see Hootenanny, yeah.
Yeah, OK. Well, we can't help you, but, you know. Just like to rub in the disappointment, so... Thanks for coming. Really hope you enjoy it, Graham.
This next one is from Cindy. Young people who insist on clicking their hand and neck joints.
Are you just gloriously arthritically free and you just don't like the sound of the popping?
Yeah, whenever you talk to them, they suddenly start cracking every finger, neck, turning, and then they do their body, and I just don't get it.
Who are these young people that you are hanging out with that do this?
Well, particularly my youngest daughter.
So you mean you're... OK, it's a bit more specific, this bugbear. What you mean is your younger daughter is your bugbear.
I'll change it on the form, Cindy. I'll change it on the form. Cindy's daughter.
How old is your daughter?
22.
OK. God. Can you click? Are you clicky?
I can do my fingers, but I feel like if I do it towards Cindy, she'll kill me.
Everyone in the audience who can click something, let's do it on three, OK? Ready? One, two, three. Oh! What a glorious chorus that was. Get that on bloody Jules Holland. Cindy, I hope that wasn't too triggering, but I really enjoyed that. Thank you. My hands feel much lighter now.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing. Now you show me yours, it's only fair I show you mine. Across the series, I'll be exploring a different controversial opinion in each episode. Before I do, though, I'd just like to preface it with this. What I'm going to talk about is arguably one of the greatest inventions mankind has ever produced. It's changed the world in so many ways and connected us all together. What I'm about to suggest might throw us decades, even centuries back in every aspect of technology, and it might even be too late to do such a thing. However, all that said, my controversial opinion this week is... I think we should abolish the internet. Right, let's see where our audience's heads are at. We're going to ask them to vote on the matter, and we have a very scientific method. We've had some boffins setting this up all afternoon. So using your keypads, vote now if you agree that we should indeed abolish the internet. Okie dokie. And if you don't agree and you think we should not abolish the internet, please vote now. They're voting away using their keypads that are connected to the internet. Not a fair system, but here we are. Results are in. Robin?
Well, I can reveal that 10% agree that we should abolish the internet, which means 90% disagree.
OK, 90% disagree. OK, very interesting. Very revealing to see that quite a lot of people in this room have become very reliant on high-speed pornography. We'll have another vote later on in the show after I've spent the next 25 minutes convincing you you're wrong. Now, a lot of people say to me, Ellie, why do you hate the internet so much?
Do they?
All the time, Robin, all the time. They say, Ellie, why do you hate the internet so much? And also, your Paso Doble was exceptional.
Are you pretending to be people online again?
Yes, I am, which is actually my first point, I've just decided. You can pretend to be anyone online. You have no idea who anyone really is. You could pretend to be, I don't know, Professor Richard Watkins.
No way, that's my friend's name. He said he was going to be here tonight.
I know he did.
What do you mean?
It's me. I'm Professor Richard Watkins. I've been messaging you as him for years.
I sent him money.
No, you sent me money. Look, the concept of catfishing is a huge reason why the internet should be abolished. The online world isn't real, and I think people forget that. There should be a genuine moment of crossing the divide when you go online, so you know to take things with a pinch of salt. And we used to have that, didn't we? We knew we were going online back in the day because this happened. See? That noise was all the chaos of the internet condensed into a few seconds of dreadful pain. You knew what you were getting into. You were turning your family computer, basically a vessel to just play Minesweeper, into a gateway where anything was possible.
As long as your mum didn't need to use the phone.
As long as your mum didn't need to use the phone. Yes. We need that journey now. We've all got the internet on our phones and in our pockets. And there's only one thing worse than that.
Oh, yeah, people who smugly tell you they purposefully bought an old phone that can't access the internet.
Yes, what is with those people? Oh, right. Oh, next train's cancelled as well. Oh, we're 100% going to be late. Oh, unless we could catch the bus instead.
Yeah, sounds good, babe.
Oh, can you Google what bus it is? My phone's dead.
I can't, I'm sorry.
Why?
My phone doesn't connect to the internet.
What?
I know.
Why, is it broken?
No, it's a 3310.
Why have you got a 3310?
Because I'm not a slave to the system anymore, babe.
I'm leaving you.
Wish I could get Tinder on this thing.
I think the ever-present nature of the internet has definitely altered our brain chemistry. Has it changed you, Robin?
Oh, in many ways.
Would you like to tell us one?
Sure. I'm now really good at selecting which box has a traffic light in it, or a bike, or a zebra crossing.
Ah, to prove you're not a robot.
To prove I'm not a robot, yes. It's nice to know, isn't it, when you get that message, you are not a robot, little green tick. Phew! Save for another day.
The speed in which we can access information is obviously a good thing, but do we use this power for good? Robin, get your phone out. Let me have a look. What is the last thing you've searched for on Google?
I don't want to say.
Robin, gross, we're at work. Go on, give me your phone. Let's have a look. Robin's last search was... Oh, God. Oh, actually, I don't want to say it. You tell them what your last search was.
How tall is Mr. Blobby?
Go on.
And how much does he weigh?
Are you trying to work out his BMI?
I'm just worried for his health.
We're far too reliant on the internet, and it's everywhere, instantly available all the time. We used to have little safe spaces without it, on the tube or on the plane, and then what did they do? They put the internet on the tube and on planes, and quite frankly, it's turned me into a bad person. I find it unacceptable when I cannot connect to the internet when I'm on a tube platform. I'm 150 feet underground, and I have to wait 3 minutes, and I don't have the internet. What am I supposed to do? Enjoy the company of my own thoughts? No, thank you. Not going down that well, thank you very much. The internet has turned most of us into hypochondriac armchair physicians. Every time I Google my symptoms, I'm convinced I'm going to die, even though the majority of the time, that dry skin that I'm worried about is just crumbs from the toast I ate in bed. I say majority of the time, it's every time. So it's turned us impatient and paranoid, and I'd also argue it's turned us into animals who lack empathy. We've lost real-life contact, and without that connection, it's so easy to criticise people online.
Fun as well.
Well, obviously it's fun, Robin, but that's not the point. We shouldn't criticise people that freely, even if they deserve it. But I'm not the first person to criticise the internet, of course I'm not. I'm merely a stand-up comedian, actor, author, presenter, and one of the most prodigious professional dancers of her generation. Now, I've got some very exciting news. I'm now going to do my Paso Doble. No, not really. Robin's forgot the cape. No, it's actually time for a guest. Now, I've not told the person that I need them to agree with me on this point, which is an oversight on my behalf, but fingers crossed they do, and let's find out. So will you please welcome author, the host of MTV's Catfish UK, and all-round internet expert, it's Uba Butler! Uber, welcome to Ellie Taylor's Safe Space. Now, you shot to fame after causing some chaos online. Can you explain what happened?
So I used to live in a garden shed in London when I first moved down here about 8 years ago. And I basically turned my garden shed into a restaurant and it did pretty well. It became the number one rated restaurant on TripAdvisor in London. It was an appointment only restaurant. The tagline is all you're allowed to know about London's best kept secret. And the catch was that the restaurant was completely made up. It didn't exist. And the reason I'd said it was an appointment only restaurant is because if people had showed up, they'd have seen me living out the back of someone's house. saying, sorry, I don't even have a table for myself, let alone you. This was in 2017, and I basically spent 6 months creating a myth around a restaurant. The website for the restaurant, it was called The Shed at Dulwich, because I have no imagination. And the website was like very upscale Michelin level looking food that looked delicious, but like if you uncropped the images from the website, what looked like delicious pan-fried scallops was like urinal cakes.
Oh, God.
With like, you know, fish stones from an aquarium.
Okay.
And a ham hock dish that was on there was actually like an egg on my foot.
So you basically used the internet to create something that didn't exist.
Yes, and it was hundreds of people were trying to book to get a table. Influencers, celebrities, business leaders, like tourists. I manipulated the rankings on TripAdvisor by using the help of family and friends. And they wrote kind of under a brief fake 5-star reviews for this restaurant. And the further we went up the rankings, the more this kind of like crazy thing around this whole fake restaurant went. And like, I was simply just saying to anyone who tried to book that they couldn't have a table. And the more that you said, no, we're fully booked, the more that they wanted a table. No one knew it was fake. And there were people walking up and down the road that I lived in Dulwich at the time being like, have you seen the shed at Dulwich? And I was like, oh, God, please don't call the phone. It's in my pocket.
Yeah. I love it. So you had this sort of whole voting racket sort of thing going on online.
Yeah.
I could have done that on Strictly a lot. That would have been really helpful. Where were your friends and family when I needed them?
It sounds incredible. I think it's such a good example of when people want what they can't have.
I
once knew somebody who for the last 22 years has tried to book for Jules Holland. It's obvious, like, the internet obviously has a lot of power. It creates hype. Do you think, obviously, what you did was harmless, really? Do you think it's a good thing, the amount of power that it has?
Yeah. I did open the place for one night only before everyone knew it was fake. And basically, I allowed 8 people who were real people to come for one night only. We had a table of 2 who'd been trying to get a table for 3 months.
Did they know it was fake?
So no one knew it was fake.
So they didn't know it was the first night it was open?
No. My challenge was to try and open this thing that I'd created in people's minds as a concept online that people wanted, to try and make that a real thing for one night only. So, yeah, we had a table of 2 who were like newlyweds from sunny California, who the night before they'd been eating on the banks of the Seine in Paris.
And now they're in your shed.
Now they're in my shed. So on the night, I basically borrowed a load of chairs from a cafe around the corner. I hired a load of actors who were saying that everything I served them was delicious. And we served microwavable ready meals from...
I was going to ask if you had kept the original menu and just an egg on your foot.
Well, yeah. I dressed up this microwavable ready meals with like edible flowers and micro herbs. And like when we serve dishes, we'd say namaste. At the end of the night, like I thought that the guy who was one of the table of 4 was going to say, you know, not only have you not fooled me, but I'm probably going to hit you in the face. But no, he said, so about tonight, now that we've been once, is it going to be easier for us to book again? Like, he did convince me that we do trust what we read online more than what we put in our mouths.
And was that why you wanted to do it? Was it sort of an experiment then to see how far you could go on the internet?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, to be honest, I was just sort of going with it and trying things out. And it genuinely was, oh, is this possible? And then it kind of led, one thing led to another, and it got even more and more silly. I was asked to go on Jeremy Vine's show to come and talk about this. And I kind of got to the point where I'd done so many interviews where I felt like I wasn't doing a very good job. So I decided to send a better version of myself on the radio as me. And it worked.
So you sent someone else pretending to be you?
Yes, and Jeremy Vine got very angry with me.
How do we know that you are the real you here tonight?
Well, if you got a slight sense of disappointment.
Oh, but thank you so much. That's been incredibly unnerving. And I hope you go on to serve many imaginary urinal cakes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers, everyone.
Uber Butler, ladies and gentlemen. How good was that? Interesting. Can't wait to go to that restaurant. It's going to look great on Instagram. Right, let's step back and have a reminder of what this is all about, okay? Who's ready for a history of the internet?
Yay.
When the internet arrived into our homes, there was the inevitable panic. CNN reported that...
Email hurts IQ more than marijuana.
The Telegraph said that...
Facebook and MySpace generation cannot form relationships.
And the Daily Mail informed us...
How using Facebook could raise your risk of cancer.
But concerns over technologies are nothing new. Douglas Adams once observed that...
Technology that existed when we were born seems normal. Anything that develops before we turn 35 is exciting, and whatever comes after that is treated with suspicion.
Which might have made sense back then, but you show me a 35-year-old who thinks they're au fait with technology, and I'll show you someone who's afraid to join TikTok because Gen Zs will make fun of their side parting in skinny jeans.
I just don't know what jeans are fashionable anymore.
When television was invented, they thought it would vulgarise American society. When the wireless radio came around, it was accused of distracting children from their schoolwork, with the kids' attention now focused on...
The compelling excitement of the loudspeaker.
Which was actually my first choice for the name of this show.
Well, Ellie Taylor's compelling excitement of the loudspeaker.
Exactly that. In the 18th century, there was a French statesman who criticised newspapers, saying that they socially isolated readers and distracted from the spirituality, uplifting group practice of getting news from the pulpit. Can you imagine getting news from the pulpit? I mean, who would even do that?
Hello, I'm Hugh Edwards and I'm coming to you live from the pulpit.
How good does pulpit sound in a Welsh accent?
So does Gorgonzola.
Oh. Lovely. But if all forms of media and culture and innovation have been criticised since their inception, why is the internet different? Why aren't we worried about the radio, for example?
I don't think the radio causes as many problems as the internet does.
You've clearly never seen the audience at Gardener's Question Time. Absolutely feral. But there is a reason, possibly in the origins of the internet and the people involved, who wanted it free from government control and libertarian qualities to wash over it. Everything was allowed on the internet. There were no rules. Nothing was off limits, much like the after party at Gardener's Question Time. So, there you have it. The internet should be abolished and it has zero benefits.
It does have its benefits.
Okay, name four.
I'll give you one. People are able to complain to companies online.
Go on.
As you know, Ellie, this is the third series and we've become firm friends.
Colleagues.
Yes. And you know that as part of my real life personality, I'm afraid of conflict.
You take that back.
Okay, I will. But it's true. So whenever I have to make a complaint about something, doing it face to face or over the phone fills me with dread, but online...
You pretend to be a right Karen and complain behind a keyboard?
Yes, please. You should see my Twitter DMs.
Well, I'd rather not, thank you.
They are filled with companies asking me for my order ID and then I begin. I imagine it's how composers feel when they start writing a symphony. Hello. I was absolutely disgusted by the service provided by your company. Start strong. As a loyal customer of many years, a lie, first-time customer, but no one checks nor cares. I fully expect a refund of the £400 and also compensation. Compensation, like I've been injured. And an apology.
Steady on now.
I'm in my groove, Ellie. You can't stop me. I hope this finds you well and a nice touch to end. And trust I will receive better service from Anne Summers in the future.
Anne Summers.
What? No, just an example of a company.
£400?
Read the next bit. It's your line now.
No, it's not.
Can we move on, please?
Oh, okay. But your point was?
That the internet's good because I can complain online with the flourish of an 18th century poet.
And it's a fair point. But in all seriousness, the internet is a platform for protests, for groups who might be able to affect change in the offline world. The Arab Spring, Me Too, these might not have happened without the internet. Yet at the same time, internet activism isn't free of criticism. Some people say that campaigning online, being vocal about causes on social media, doesn't really do anything. And for some, it defines their entire online persona.
Yeah, I've completed 6 online petitions today, blocked 3 people who work for a charity, compared a right-wing journalist to a war criminal, and wrote a tweet to my MP calling him a shameful little toad. Quite the busy day.
The internet has its good and its bad, and it's only as good or bad as the people using it. And I do worry about what it's doing to children. Surely staring at a screen isn't good for their development. Whatever happened to proper childhoods, like playing cup and ball or pushing a hoop down a road?
You're starting to sound like one of those pages on social media which baby boomers share. You know, like, who remembers proper bin men?
Exactly, all those memes, all the videos we watch. Think of all the time we'd get back if we didn't have the internet. Ofcom found in 2021 that in the UK, adults spend on average 3 hours, 37 minutes on the internet every day. That's one day a week.
That's quick maths.
Thanks, I Googled it. Whole day a week online. Think of what you could do with that time.
I'm learning Welsh with the help of that passive-aggressive owl.
Oh, Duolingo?
Oh, no, her name's Dillis. She works at the local library.
Now, all the apps we use now would have to go, and that would change a lot of things, wouldn't it?
Dating. Lots of people meet online now. That would change.
Well, we actually both met our partners in real life, didn't we? And that was fine. I met my husband at work.
I met my wife in school.
Oh, that's sweet.
I know. She was the dinner lady.
Dating was fine before the internet. You know, all our grandparents met like that, and you'd hear them tell stories about how they fell in love.
Well, your grandfather only lived down the street, didn't he? And then one day, he came to the door and he said to me, do you remember Derek? Derek, do you remember what you first said to me?
Yes, I said, hello, I'm Derek, will you marry me?
And my father said, he said, yes, you will, you have my permission, here's her things, goodbye forever.
And that was that.
What else would change?
Spam emails. They wouldn't exist. Spam would just be meat in a tin. Great news for the lads at Spam. Good for the brand.
You said spam a lot in that sentence.
I'm trying to get sponsored by them. Spam. Internet banking?
Every time I transfer money over, I either have to find that weird little plastic pocket calculator thing and put my card in, which never feels safe. It's like I'm scamming myself. Then I have to do a little maths riddle, and somehow that gets me through my bank's top level of security. I don't trust it.
My bank's mobile app makes me take a selfie and I have to position myself in the frame and then blink at the screen like I'm a hostage trying to communicate with the police. Yes, you may set up a direct debit to OnlyFans.
Sorry, OnlyFans?
Oh, no comment.
No comment indeed. Don't worry, Robin, I'll move on.
Thank you very much.
So let's pull this plaster off and see if I've won anyone around. So, studio audience of the BBC Radio Theatre, pick up those keypads in your lovely, soft, manicured hands.
Stop complimenting them to win votes.
Grow up, Robin. OK. If you agree that the internet should be abolished, vote now. OK. If you don't agree, you think the internet should not be abolished, vote now. Right, let's see if I've managed to convince any of you that my new offline world is the way forward and we should indeed abolish the internet. Robin, what is the damage?
12% agree and 88% disagree. You've won over 2% of the audience.
Yes!
Look at that, the power I have. I might go into politics and then into the jungle and then out of politics. Hey, you know what? I may not have convinced most of you, but we do know that the internet isn't all good. We know overuse is bad for us. But what's the solution? Moderating our use online? What a boring conclusion to the show that would be. But honestly, it does sound good. I think you should get one post a week and you have to really decide what you're going to do with it. Like, use it like tokens, rationing. We are rationing the internet. So you either get to post a picture of your dinner or complain to a train company or troll Piers Morgan. Let's take the internet back and party like it's 1999.
Great. How do we do it?
I'll set up an online petition. Oh, crap! So that's it for this week. Join me in my safe space next time. I've been Ellie Taylor. Goodbye!
Ellie Taylor's Safe Space was written by and starred Ellie Taylor and Robin Morgan. It was produced by Georgia Keating and is a BBC Studios production.
And Ellie will be back with Safe Space next week when she'll be weighing the pros and cons of reality TV with a very special guest from The Traitors. Next this evening, Will is reminded of some painful history in The Archers. And coming up on Front Row at 7.15, the screenwriter Cash Carraway will be talking about her new dark comic drama for the BBC, Rain Dogs, starring Daisy May Cooper. That's all ahead after the news, but first here's Dr. Shan Williams.
Life-changing moments.
It was so instant that I didn't really have time to think.
Astonishing turning points.
There was a date of birth that didn't relate to the date of birth that we knew him to have had.
Inspirational journeys.
My dad was actually one of 69 brothers.
69?
Yeah.
The new series of Life Changing with me, Dr. Sean Williams.
What happens next?
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. starts next Wednesday morning at 9.